Don't start podcasting. I'm spiritual. I'm Wendell. I'm living loved by God. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work. And I've been a control freak. Still have those tendencies. I've had issues with pornography and alcohol and rage and panic and depression. And guess what? We've passed that on to our kids, the depression part. Bless our son, he's depressed and up in Iowa. Clint, it's a good place, but it's too cold for him. Clint's from Iowa. you'd have to take issue with him. There's other things as well. We found it to be a much more beautiful state that we thought it'd just be tabletop flat, but it's actually a beautiful, beautiful state. Just it was like almost breathtaking some places. So Clint's from a good place. But Jake's up there, and then Bethany's on your, and we found out she's struggling every now and then with depression. We think, isn't that great? You pass on your good stuff to your kids, but you pass on your bad stuff as well. So here we are facing Christmas, and we've talked about, you know, expectations and what that's like. You go into a family time, extended family time, and you have all these expectations because it's just built in to the holiday. When you were a kid, you expected to get what you wanted on your birthday, on Halloween, and on Christmas. So this is a holiday that comes loaded from birth with expectations, and you grow up, and now you don't want a new bike. You just want to get along with grandma or with the in-laws or whatever. You know, that's the replacement for wanting a new bike. Nobody gives you a BB gun to shoot their eye out with. No, wait, that's another story. No, we don't go there. So you come into it with expectations, and so often they're unrealistic so often. So when they're not met, you drive all the way home thinking, why did we do that? We thought it would be better than last year. We're not going to do this next year, and then you do it next year. So then last week we talked about when there's a vacant place at the table. When somebody passes, there's a divorce. Somebody's overseas in the service. A child rebels and says, no, I don't want to be with you for Christmas. Well, for whatever reason, you have a vacant place or you may have somebody in the family who has come down with Alzheimer's or something. So they're there, but they're not there. Nobody has toxic people in their family. I understand this. This is for somebody else, but you can take notes and tell it to somebody else because everybody here has perfectly functional families. We all know that, so let's just get that out of the way. But let me read the lesson that was they had on Monday night out at Greenwood. I'll read the lesson and make a few comments. So this, you have several vying for the honor. Ain't that a hoot? You know, the fly in the ointment, the broccoli in the teeth, the one everybody talks about on their way home. Wow, this can go so many directions. If the pachyderm is a parent, like a parent, they already have your brain conditioned to see them as authorities in your life. Years can't eliminate this. Ain't that crazy? You can be in your 60s and your parent can be in their 80s and they still tell you what to do and they treat you like a child. Isn't that crazy? Years can't eliminate this. Neither can distance, education, therapy, prayers, etc. In your subconscious, they will always be mom and dad. You may have found ways to cope with this, set boundaries with this, dig in your heels against this, but you can never unparent them. Ain't that the truth? You cannot unparent your parents. As dysfunctional as that may be. If they are toxic people, they will undoubtedly exploit this dynamic. They may be overbearing. They may be abusive, deceptive, manipulative, passive-aggressive, pathetic, etc. This comes in all kinds of delightful Christmas packages. Here's the problem. When you were little, all this was normal. You knew no alternative. The system was locked in on all sides. But time, distance, and maturity have taught you otherwise. Now you're caught between the same old parents and your newfound knowledge. Do you indict them? Do you correct them? Do you rebel? Do you ignore? Do you distance, even though you're under the same roof and in the middle of a family celebration? This can be a real challenge. Add to this your children. What happens? Think about this, y'all. If you've gone through this, this hits hard. Add to this your children. What happens when the toxic people from your past begin poisoning your kids? How do you tell your son that his grandfather doesn't always tell the truth? How do you explain your mother's eccentricities to a granddaughter who thinks she hung the moon? Again, this can be a real challenge. There are so many ways families become toxic. Perverted uncles, violent cousins, outspoken political rhetoric, legalistic religious demands. You can add to the list. A favorite recovery statement goes like this. Hurt people, healthy people, heal people. You may be the only healthy person in your family mix during the holidays. This can feel very lonely, but you need to feel good and confident about how to bring health to your larger family unit, but you need to know that health, grace, has mysterious powers and potential. Sometimes the grace in you is working magic that you can't even see. Just remind yourself that the selfless gestures of grace shine most brightly in the midst of what you might see as a graceless, selfish family. And also remind yourself that the same God who is at work in you is also working on inside those who feel the most toxic to you. They may be resisting, but he's not about to quit gracing them. So that was what was in the lesson Monday night, if you were there. I want to make 4 points about it tonight, and I'll keep track of time. 6:39, I'll keep track of my time. Let's just jump back to the first lesson real quick and just talk about expectations. If you know you have toxic people in your family, a mother, a father, a sibling, an uncle, an aunt, whatever, just get real. You know, if your expectations say, okay, I've been in recovery for a while, I haven't been with my extended family for a while, I have a lot of knowledge I didn't have, I have a lot of healing I didn't have before, I will go home and I will set things right. My mother, who is 80 years old, will be a different person because of my holiday visit home. Yeah, come back and tell us how that went. A single holiday visit is not going to detoxify anyone or anything. So just not going to do it. It's just a huge mistake to think that because we have recovery, because we have a measure of healing, that somehow we can set this situation straight. I mean, haven't we been in recovery long enough to know? Whoever it is, you know, the elephant in the room, if it's your expectation to go home and say, well, I'll just have a conversation with them. You know, I'll tell them some of the stuff I learned in my 12-step group, and it'll all be good. All right, that's point one. Let's just get that out of the way. Ain't going to work. If it does, please come back. We want you to have a whole night to explain how you did it and what you said. We want to know. In fact, we will help you write a book. You can write a freaking book so that, you know, because we want to replicate what you did. That's point one. Point two is this. This is the way I approach it. Doesn't mean it's the way you should approach it, but I think I've talked to enough other people that I think this will resonate with a few of us. Start by figuring out what is your primary emotion toward this toxic person and get dead honest. Am I angry at them? At first you would say, no, it's my dear mother, or no, it's my grandmother who raised me when I, whatever, whoever that person, you feel like a family member, it's disrespectful to say you're angry. But if you are and you keep denying it, you're stuck. So if you have anger toward a toxic family member, admit that. Just own it. I'm angry at them. I have this glowing ember inside me, and it's not love. You know, it's something else. Are you afraid of them? Jealous of them? You see where I'm going with this? I think it's important to sit down. Are you fatigued by them? Maybe fatigue is not an emotion. But a five-minute conversation feels like 3 hours to you. It literally feels like they stick a straw into your soul and they suck it out in 5 minutes. They are consummate takers. Not takers of money, but takers of energy. They just take your energy, suck it right out. So fatigue is not an emotion, but maybe the fear of that fatigue, the dread of that fatigue. I think it's important. Now, there's two things I think we need to say about this that I didn't like this week as they came to my mind because they were too probing to me. As I looked at this, I thought, this searches too deep into my heart, but I'm just going to give you a peek of where I'm at. Do you notice this in a spouse or a child or a parent or anybody you have a life history with, that stuff that happened years ago is so stuck in your system, so firmly planted on your radar, that everything they do and say today gets filtered through that memory? They may be a totally different person than they were, and they've had years and years as this totally different person, and yet when you're with them, you can't help yourself. Every word they say, every gesture they do, everything they, the whole encounter, it still gets filtered through that old baggage. Yeah, but I remember when you did that to me. I remember when you said that. I remember when you treated me that way. And so the only thing you're seeing is them the old way, even though they've completely changed. Because it all gets filtered through these memories. If you felt betrayed, if you felt abused, if you felt deceived, if you felt manipulated, if you felt controlled, dominated, whatever it was by them, you still, they may smell a rat, you know? You see what I'm saying? Everything gets filtered through those old, that's not fair. When I thought of that, I thought, yes, I have people I do that to. I have situations I do that to. Robbie and I have been talking here lately about a situation here at Broadway where Broadway me, but were abused by a child. Life has played out. It smells like years ago when we were abused by a church. And so we're assuming, oh, we know what's coming. It's not the case at all. Not even close. You see what I'm saying? So we're filtering. We can do this in so many ways. You do this at work. You do it so many ways where you have friends and you're punishing your current friend for something a friend did a long time ago. And this friend is saying, it's not me. So it goes way past the Christmas thing. It goes to, we get these foggy filters on our lenses, and we take in life through, Jesus talked a lot about the eye, didn't he? And we filter things through these eyes that are all messed up because of our past. And so our current people don't stand a chance. They don't stand a chance. It's why our marriages are messed up. It's the way we screw up with our kids, And so it's we can't just take our glasses off and, shine them up. You're not going to do that. But it's really important, I think, to know that this is a dynamic in humans. And to seek healing for that fogginess, to seek cleansing and, God, clean my lenses off so I can see the person in front of me for who they are, not who that person was in the past. But anyway, so what is your primary emotion toward this toxic person in your family? And you have to be honest. You got to be honest. Are they still a threat? Are they still that same old person? Because they very well could be. Or am I just still seeing them that way? Because they fogged up my lenses so badly years ago that I'm still looking at them, a healthy version of them, but I'm seeing them through unhealthy lenses. That's one thing. But here's the other way, and this is very true. If they are, in fact, still toxic, if they are still, in fact, unchanged, or, heaven forbid, worse than they were, which that's often the case, Have you ever heard that Paul Simon, Simon and Garfunkel, his statement, he said, when you get old, you get the face you deserve. And I thought, wow, the wisdom of that is unbelievable. You work your whole life to be either grumpy and grouchy and mean and selfish. So some people work all their life to be sons of bitches. And they achieve it. They reach their goal. It's sad to say. Have you ever, we're going off on a big rabbit trail here. But have you ever thought, I know we all think this. What do you want people to say when you take your last breath? What do you want them to say about you? I wish that I really hope I can tell absolute crazy joke right before I die, or say something just completely off the wall. This is terrible. It's a podcast. I can't say that. I wouldn't say it anyway. Tell a terrible, funny joke, pass gas, and then die. Can you? They're all gathered around my bed. They're like, he didn't just do that. And I'm up in heaven thinking, yes, I did. And you'll never forget it. That he made us laugh. He made us happy. He, you know, you think about that. Have you ever gathered around the bed of somebody who died mad or died afraid or died, you know? So when you look at this, this unhealthy person, I used to get angry at people close to me. And now I think, man, it would suck to be them. You think about it. They're going to lay on their deathbed and they're going to think of all the people that they ran over and all the people they hurt and all the people they deceived and manipulated, and they're going to think, I can crack all the jokes I want. It's not going to work. It's not, you know, I lived a whole life and I could just imagine what they'll say when they bury me. Or, no, they'll say something polite. It's on the way home from the funeral. The truth will come out. You know? And so, I don't know. Do y'all think about that? I want to die well. I want to die well. And it may be tomorrow. It may be 30 years from now. I don't know. But I want to die well. I think about that a lot. I'm not morbid. I don't have a death wish. But I think if I want to live well, I also want to die well. But heaven forbid that you have toxic people in your family who are more toxic than they used to be. So you know you're going to go home and face that again. And under your old path, we have to keep in mind is that those kind of people will suck you right back into your old patterns in 5 seconds if you'll let them. You'll become the groveling little child, you know. You'll become the attention seeker. You'll become the people pleaser. You'll become, you know, the backbiter. You ever go home and your family's full of backbiters? And I mean, it's just feast on the last person who left the room. They're just like feasting on them. And if you grew up in that family, the temptation is strong to jump right back. And our family's like that. Yeah, big time. And you'll sit there and it'll get, it's like a feeding frenzy. And it'll start to heat up and you'll just think, I don't want to be here. No. I used to jump right in those conversations. It's like, I don't want to be here. No, I don't want to get sucked back into that, this hate festival that they're having. I don't want to do it. So that's two things. Point two took a little longer than point one, sorry. I think I chased a few rabbits. Sorry, Ron. Ron doesn't like it when I chase rabbits. But he gives me grace. Number three, what do you see your options heading into this visit? So a lot of it is you can't pre-plan relationships, you know. You can't come up with a game plan and say, we're going to stick to it. Because how's that working in relations? You can kind of have some general ideas, but you can't just set this solid plan. But what do you see as your options? What do you see as your options? I'm going to slip back into my old role and I'm going to play it. If it gets real nasty, I'll just kind of, I got to go to the bathroom, or I got to go out back and walk the dog or something. But I'm just going to go back and play the role I always played, but I'm not going to, there's certain lines I won't cross. You know, kind of get along to, how do they say that? Go along to get along. I'll just kind of go along to get along. But you know it's fake. You know it's not the you, but it's like, I just don't want to rock the boat. That's what I do most of the time. I'm just going to confess. I'm just going to go home, and I'm not going to say anything controversial, and I'm not going to push any hot buttons, and I'm just going to be the nice son, and, you know, it's what I'm going to do. So that's option one. We've talked about this a lot. You just see it as something on your work list. It's a do-do list. Mow the lawn, you know. Mow the lawn, rake the leaves, go home for Christmas. It's just another, you know, feed the dog, take out the trash, go home for Christmas. It's just something on your to-do list that you're going to kind of just meet an obligation if I don't go, they'll be upset with me, and it'll cause more problems than if I do go. So I'll just do go, and then when I get home, I'll check it off. I did that, you know. In 2018, I did that. I checked it off my list of to-do things, and it wasn't my favorite things, but I did it. And so I survived it. I'm here to talk about it. I don't like that option, but with a mask on. And then the third option would be I'm going to go home with a mask on and a cape, and I'm going to save my family. You know, da-da-da, you know. We've already talked about that. That ain't going to work. So you go home, and it's just a great thing. We're working hard on our immediate family that it doesn't become dysfunctional, but it very well may. I hope not. But think kind of pre-plan what are my options going home for Christmas? What option am I going to take? And you're probably going to take a much better one than any one of those three. Here's the fourth point, and then we'll close with this. One thing you got to keep in mind is most likely when you go home to a dysfunctional extended family, most likely you're going to be ahead of everybody else in the room when it comes to understanding family dynamics and family dysfunction and toxicity. Doesn't mean you can fix it. It doesn't mean you're better than anybody else. Doesn't even mean you're smarter than anybody else. It just means that God's haven't had enough grace on you to be able to come to a place like this on Sunday night and then the groups in midweek and to unpack some of this stuff and understand this about yourself and about your family. So you go home instead of what was that or boy, this feels awful. You go home and say, I know what's going on here. I know who I am and I know who the toxic people are and I know what the dynamics are that are going on here. It doesn't mean you can fix them. Doesn't mean you can rechannel them or anything else. But knowing is huge. Knowing is enormous, just to know. I think it helps me to Trinity Prayer, we pray that we'll be reasonably happy. Reasonably happy. I think a reasonable family experience is much better than an ecstatic family experience that goes bad. So we have much more reasonable expectations, and it keeps us from being blindsided. Oh, I didn't see that one coming. Yeah, you did. You already knew that was going to happen. So you're not blindsided. And you know what? Here's the way I look at it. With our family doesn't hardly get together. In case you're new or whatever, this is my sister here, Loretta. So this side of my family, we don't. It's been a while since we've all gotten together. It's been a long time. And we get together with Robbie's family. This is my wife. We get together every so often. And what I've tried to do now is, and we talked about this several weeks ago, but I'll unpack it just a little bit more. I try to focus on the next generation down, like our kids' generation. Focus on that generation and say, maybe we can break the cycle. They're not set in this dysfunction quite yet. It's not concrete. It's more like jello, you know? And so if I can spend some time loving on them and letting them talk about what they see as our family dynamic is and see their viewpoint on it, how do you feel about this? You know, how do you feel about it when he gets so mad? How do you feel about it when she goes to bragging or she goes to lying or whatever? How do you feel about that? You get these conversations going, and there's a chance that you can play a role in at least breaking one or two of the cycles of this dysfunction, and that you can help them process it and come to a healthier place than you were at when you were their age. You see what I'm saying? So it's working grace with people who are open to grace instead of people who are set in their ways and say, no, I'm the way I want to be. I don't want to change. This came to me, I thought the only person in the room that'll get this is Donnie. He's the only one that'll get it. But I'm fishing, and he had a buddy the other day fishing down in Woodbury, Tennessee, and he's new at fishing, and he had a bait casting outfit. So he was doing this sidearm thing like this, and I said, you ever just cast like that? He said, no, I can't do that. I said, why? He said, watch. He goes, well, the whole reel went, this big bird's nest came up in the reel. I said, oh, you don't have your magnet set right. You got to kind of fix that. And I tried to show him how to fix that. But if, has anybody ever had what you call a bird's nest when you're, ain't that fun? Isn't that hilarious? Yeah. Oh, that's even worse. Yeah. So you've got this big glom, really bad. This is a rabbit trail, Ron, sorry. This really bad is if you're sitting in a boat with somebody else and they're reeling them in right and left and you're picking a bird's nest out. While they're just landing, she says, I know what you're talking about. You're picking a bird's nest out while they're just landing right and left. But family dysfunction is like that bird's nest. It's all one line. It's all one string. You all have the same DNA. You know, once you get it straightened out, it's a beautiful piece of string, 8-pound test, you know. It's just this nice long piece. And you can do a lot with it, you know. You can do a lot with that piece of united fishing line. But when it's in a bird's nest, which happens at Christmas time, it can be the most frustrating thing, especially when you come back to Pathway and people say, we had the best Christmas. We just got along with it. And you're thinking, oh, we had a bird's nest, you know, and we picked at it, but nothing happened. So just know if you have a sucky Christmas that you can come back here and you will be loved and you will not be belittled or degraded in any way. You will be supported and you can talk about it and nobody will say anything bad about you talking about it. We will sit and listen we'll all work through it together. But that's what I love about this place is that every church I've ever gone to, how was your Christmas visit? You had to lie about it. How's that working, you know? Oh, it's great. You know, here you can come and say, you know, it didn't go so well. It didn't go so well. Well, tell me about it. Okay. So you can sit down and talk about it. So anyway, you are an elite class of person. You are a rare, rare specimen. And we need to put you in a glass and put you on the shelf. Maybe make a monument to you. Because families have dysfunction. They always will. And we go home at Christmas and we love them and go home and we smile and we cry together. And that's just the way it works. So we'll have the last in this series next Sunday night. And Loretta's leading the band next Sunday night. So, woohoo. All right, Nami.